Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bloomberg Intelligence Tech Disruptors Podcast. My name is Anurag Rana, and I'm a technology analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, which is Bloomberg's in-house research arm. We're delighted to have Sandeep Sahai, who's the CEO of Clearwater Analytics Holding, with us. To kick it off, Sandeep, can we please start with your background and your current role at Clearwater and how you got to the company?
Anurag, thank you for having me on the podcast here. My name is Sandeep Sahai, and I'm the CEO of Clearwater Analytics. This small little company based in Boise, Idaho. I've been with the company for about 6.5 years, so I've been involved with them for a pretty long period of time. And we're quite excited to talk about the company, what we do, and how we hope to disrupt the world of investment management.
From that point, tell us a little bit about the company in terms of what problems are you solving and, what areas in the legacy software place are you disrupting?
Yeah, so when you think about it, institutions have large investment portfolios. So you think about yourself and you also think about larger institutions. You invest in simple assets like equities, bonds, which are relatively easy to follow. What's the price of an equity? Well, you can go to the stock market and figure out what the price is. It's relatively simple. But then people also invest increasingly, Anurag, in very much more complicated, what we call alternative assets. So people are investing in mortgage-backed securities. Okay, what's the price of that? And people are investing in LPs. People are investing in what we call MLX. People are investing in private credit. So people are investing in different asset classes, but Anurag, they're also investing in different countries, in very many different regulatory regimes. And what Clearwater does is takes all of that information on a daily basis and gives you a comprehensive view of your entire portfolio. That's the proposition. So when you think about you as, let's say, you're the chief investment officer of an insurance company or an asset manager or a corporate, you've got all of these investments all around the world and you want to decide what to do today morning. What we do is we give you one comprehensive view of all your assets around the world, and that's used for your risk management. Then you use it for understanding performance each of these asset classes, regulatory reporting. And finally, we also your accounting book of record and rug. So obviously you have these assets, you have to account for them on a daily basis. So we don't just give you analytics. We are also your book of record for all of your investments globally. And that's what sort of Clearwater provides to you.
So when we look at the competitive landscape, who would, prior to, buying your software package, what kind of software was I using in my firm? Is it homegrown systems? Is it some legacy software companies? I mean, who are you essentially replacing at the end of the day?
Yeah, so when you think about 15 years back and you're an insurance company, Anurag, what you were doing was pretty much stocks and bonds, right? And so you had a separate system. There are many systems which do equities really well. And then there are many systems which do stocks and bonds really well and fixed income instruments really well. But the problem has arisen because you as an investor have started to invest in other alternative asset classes and other countries, and risk has suddenly become a really big deal. So you need a comprehensive view. There's no sense in saying, this is the risk on my equity portfolio. Because risk, as you know, counterbalances between asset classes. So you need to understand a comprehensive view. So I think there is in our industry many, many, many providers of accounting software for an asset class for a given country. What Clearwater does differently is it has one platform on the cloud, which is cloud native, which does all assets, all countries. And that is the differentiator. It's not like we do equity accounting any better, or we do mortgage accounting better than the leading mortgage providers. We do it as well as them and better than them, but we give you the comprehensive view. So we replace all of our business, not all is too strong a term, but most of our business is about replacing legacy competitors.
I was going through your investor presentation a few days ago, and what really surprised me is the consistency at which the revenue has grown in that time frame. But at the same time, the asset classes have been all over the place, you know, whether it's mortgage-backed security or whether it's the private equity investments. So is there a, you know, is there anything that we should read into it that you're not, you know, moved about by the volatility in the asset class, but you still have, you know, room to run just on the move to the cloud basis? So what, you know, what I'm trying to say is, you know, what is your fundamental growth driver right now?
Yeah, so you got to believe in one of the following. So if you are investing as a client in more asset classes, then you need a Clearwater. But let's say you're not changing anything. You're doing only equities. Yeah, there isn't really a compelling reason to move to Clearwater today. So that's one reason, is that you're investing in other asset classes. Suppose you want to tomorrow invest in private credit, or you want to invest in a mortgage security, or you want to invest in LPs. Yeah. One more accounting engine, or do you move to Clearwater? So that's one way to move to, a reason to move to Clearwater. The second thing could be different countries. You suddenly want to buy a portfolio in Germany, or buy a portfolio in India, or buy a portfolio in Japan. Yeah, best of luck trying to build another accounting engine, another regulatory reporting, and that becomes a reason to move to Clearwater. The third thing is acquisitions. You buy anything, and now you're back to merging three different accounting engines from three different systems, usually very hard. The fourth reason people will come to ask is risk. Risk is a massive issue in the world today. So if you believe risk management is going to continue to become more and more important, you'd come to Clearwater. Finally, and this is also a very compelling one, Anurag, is the regulatory regime just continues to become more and more complicated. And regulatory reporting is all about all your assets, not one of your assets. So again, one of these five things have to happen. But if you were a provider who was just doing equities and in one state in the country, in one country, yeah, then the need to move to Clearwater is lower. But if any of those five are true, that's what precipitates the need to move to a solution like ours.
So, I mean, you know, I many years ago, I used to work at a bank, and part of the risk management was, you know, you take your positions in equities, your positions in fixed income, you bring it to a common platform, and then you run Monte Carlo simulations. How do you make my life easier, you know, from your software?
This is such a good question. But look what he just said. You said we took equities and we took fixed income, we brought it together. Now put it in today's world. You now have to bring your mortgage accounting together and your LPs together, private credit together, and then you have to do the same thing for all equities in Europe and in Asia. And you have to bring it all together and do it in one spot. What Clearwater does, it gets you out of the business. So I want to make this point just so that it's clear. You don't run Clearwater. We run Clearwater, the platform. So what Anurag will do is he will tell me, here are my custodians, here's my trading platforms, and here are the sources I get pricing from. And then Clearwater gets that on a daily basis. You don't do data ingestion. I do the data ingestion on your behalf. I do the data reconciliation on your behalf. Our platform does all of the accounting. What you do, Anurag, is you wake up in the morning, you come to your seat, and you get a comprehensive view. Versus in the thing which you just said, you built the data warehouse. You brought the data in. You reconcile. No, you get out of the business. You're not in this business. We are doing this for you and providing you. So it is a completely different paradigm. It's very much like Salesforce and Siebel, Anurag. Siebel, you ran yourself. Salesforce is different. It's on the cloud. It's available to you. It's like Workday versus PeopleSoft. It just is a different way of operating.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned both those names. We have been covering them for over a decade now. And one of the interesting things we have seen in that those two business models is the end market is just very large. So let's talk a little bit about the size of your overall market that you compete in. You know, how do you define it? Where are you in terms of penetration rate? How do you think, you know, it's going to shape up for the next few years?
Yeah. So look, if I can just sort of brag a little for a second. Look, I think once we write a proposal on Anurag, we win 80% of the time. And this data we report to the street, and we have been winning at that level for the last several years. Because really, if you think about the same examples we were talking about, Salesforce and Workday, I mean, not many people leave another software and say, I'm going to Siebel today. And that makes no sense. Not many people say, I am going to switch my HR system, but I'm going to go to PeopleSoft. Like, people don't go to legacy platforms. And that's why we win 80% of the time. and the 20 we lose, Anurag, 15% of the time the client says, I get your value proposition. I'm just not going to move right now. So it's not a loss to a competitor. It is a loss to status quo, if you will, or the pain is not high enough. So we can think of our market very, very, we can just calculate very specifically what the TAM for Clearwater is. And how do we do that? Every insurance company is required to state how many assets, what assets they have, the AUM they have. Same thing with all of the asset managers. Same thing with corporates and REITs. So we can take those names, we can put the AUM next to it, and then you can put next to it what Clearwater charges for that, which is BIPs based on AUM, roughly speaking. And so we can calculate that exactly almost, that here's the market of our insurance, here's the market for asset managers in each of these continents. So we think our market is about 10 to 11 billion, give or take a little bit, right, of the work we do. And only on the functions we win 80% of the time. So if there are some other markets which we don't win, then we don't count it as a part of our TAM, right? And our pricing is AUM influenced. And so we can calculate quite precisely what it is. So we think we are, I think we are forecasting, north of $400 million in revenue this year, but it is a $10 to $11 billion market. And almost all of it is from legacy providers of software.
You know, that is very interesting. I've, over the my career, I've bumped into a lot of companies that price on the underlying, dynamics of either AUM or the price of oil or how much you drill. So that's a very interesting dynamic. So now, but in a year, let's say, the market tanks, if you have a big downdraft, does it mean that, you're going to get hit in a similar way? Let's say take you back to, 2009-10 timeframe where there was a severe compression in AUM in the industry.
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. And we did face a little bit of that in 2022. So it's super relevant and super, super interesting to talk about. So firstly, think about who our clients are. So let's talk with the corporate clients. Guess what the number one mandate is, Anurag? They're not investing for fancy growth. They're investing for capital preservation. Think about insurance companies. The first thing, the way they invest is they'll hedge, they'll do things. They are first protecting capital before going down, right? So the investors we have tend to be very watchful of market fluctuations, if you will, right? And so they invest in a very safe, conservative way. Having said that, what you're saying is exactly true. And before 2022, we used to price pretty heavily based on AUM. But because of the problems in 2022, we went back and did a mass scale change in how we contract with clients. And what we did on Rug was we said, look, off the book you have with us, here is a fee, which is called a base fee we're going to charge you. And then as you grow, we'll charge you more based on that. So it became base plus, right? And then the customers obviously said, look, if I go down, then does my fee come down? And the point is, who would you have bought? And would that fee have come down? And the point is, not really, right? So if you had bought any other software, the legacy software you had, that's how it would be. Now, if it goes down by half, obviously come talk to us. We'll change your team. We will change your, how we service you, and we will change your fee. But in the last year and a half and 2 years, not one client has come back and said, hey, I want you to change my team, and I want you to do that. So what we have done is created a base plus pricing model, which sort of protects the downside, if you will, while growing with the client as the client's assets grow.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go back and think about the infrastructure and the spending, not to mention the manpower it needed to do some of this stuff. So, from a pricing point of view, you said there's not even one client who came back. Do you have client attrition? If that happens, why would anybody, move out, I guess?
Yeah, so we super proud. I think in the last 5 years, roughly 4 or 5 years, our gross revenue retention has been 98%, except for one quarter when it was 97. And that was literally a rounding issue. So yes, one client's come on our platform, Anurag, they 98% retention. And even that we are always concerned about, like, why did 2% of the clients leave us? And so when you dig into that 2%, it's almost always somebody got acquired, some asset management shut down, and something always happens of the smaller scale, if you will. And so we do tend to lose 2%, but for a long period of time and protracted period of time, being 2% for exactly the reason you said. Like, if you're going to leave Clearwater, where are you going to go? And again, we don't take that for granted. Some of my compensation on RUG is also driven by NPS. And so we focus on net promoter score of clients a lot. And that was a little bit of joy of, I know you had asked a question earlier about, you know, how did you get involved? I mean, this company in Boise, you know, it's a smaller town, very up and coming town, but the commitment to clients is extraordinary. And I don't mean software. I mean, if you flew into Boise today, the customer service you would get in any establishment is sort of a little bit off the charts. And they still have that Midwest focus on providing value to clients, doing the right things at the right time. And frankly, that's why I went back and why I started with them is from that somewhat humble beginning, they were trying to become a global company, serving global clients, having offices globally. And I've sort of done that in my life before. And so that's what sort of drove my that was the reason I went back and started working with them.
You know, there is a value proposition for Workday and Salesforce when they move, you know, somebody off premise onto that. Have you quantified as to what's the total cost of ownership reduction for a client if they move on from their on-premise system with, you know, manpower onto your cloud platform?
Yeah. So, but if I can just push on that for 1 second, Anurag, just to, in the spirit of talking about it. When you think about Workday, how often do tax rules change? If you think about tax, they change very little. How often do you think regulatory regimes change here? Every day, and I'm not meaning every day, multiple times, they look at the number of changes that come out from the NAIC or from regulatory authorities around the world. So the relevance of a Clearwater is much, much higher than in the case of a Workday and Salesforce, because when we make a change in our software, all of our clients immediately get that change instead of having to do patches. So I did want to just talk about that for 1 second, is that it makes a difference. In our industry where things change so much, it makes a huge difference when you talk about the relevance of our technology, right? I know you had asked a question. I sort of missed it.
Oh, it was just about the total cost of ownership. Like what kind of savings am I getting when I move to your SaaS platform compared to what I was running on-premise?
Yeah, I think the short answer of that is a lot of people will buy us for business enablement. So I want to talk about cost. I'm not running from the cost at all. But so if you are an asset manager, Anurag, think about your clients, okay? So let's take even a large asset manager. We talked about many of them. How are you reporting to them? So typically, if there's an institutional investor for one of the large asset managers, and they have money with you in mortgages, in LPs, in equities, and they get 5 different reports, are they really going to buy your services? So for many asset managers, we are a revenue provider. We help them grow their revenue. It's not about the cost. It is, am I helping you grow your revenue? That's number one. Number two, am I helping you retain your revenue? That's number two. Because if you and I both went to make a pitch to an institutional mandate, for an institutional mandate, and I had the best accounting and reporting platform, which you could see, and you, Anurag, had something which comes out once a month, or which I have to call you about all the time, versus my platform, which you can sort of query whenever you want. So we are seen much more as a revenue enhancer. When you come to asset owners, which is like insurance companies, and if you want to invest in Japan tomorrow, if you had Clearwater already has Japanese GAAP, already has accounting for it. So you could switch that on now instead of waiting for a year to implement an accounting engine, do the regulatory. So we think of ourselves much more as enabling investment management versus I can save you costs. Now, is it cheaper? Of course, eventually things in the cloud are cheaper. I also replace all of your systems around data ingestion, around data aggregation, about the reporting. So the number is really high, but we don't like to spend a lot of time on, we can save you 40% on your current running cost, which we can. But what we are much more focused on, can we help you grow your business and be effective today? That is sort of the bigger pitch.
No, that's fair. In fact, that's a very very good way to put it. Again, I was diving through your investor presentation, a few things really stood out to me. One was the complexity of the asset classes, the SEC enforcement action, and the regulatory alerts. That's usually not sometimes what I see are the main business drivers for anybody to switch, you know, a software. So would love to get a little bit more color from you on these three elements as to how that's, I guess, forcing clients to move to your software.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times we'll get literally a call from the audit committee and say, show me where this data came from, right? And more often than not, our clients would have a hard time sort of harking back and explaining where the data came from, because it's all super manual aggregation or data warehousing, right? With Clearwater, it's one platform. It's all in the cloud. If you make an exception, Anurag, you have to enter the exception you made or the override you made, and it's stored. So when your auditor comes in and they ask Clearwater, we don't answer it. We just say, here's a login, log in on the system, go take a look, and you can figure out exactly where the data came from. So a lot of times the audit committees will come to us because they don't trust that. Lots of times the risk is a big thing. So the CFO or the chief investment officer will come to us and say, I don't understand the risk of this whole portfolio and what it's attributed to. And so that would be a second thing which people will come to us. But like I said, a lot of the time it is driven by revenue on rug. So these things are really important. But what drives it is, am I helping you grow your revenue? Am I helping you retain your revenue? And for asset owners, am I helping you invest globally where you want to, instead of being limited by... But just think about it, Anurag, tomorrow. You wanted to invest in Brazil tomorrow. Let's say there was a great idea. You saw the deck and you really liked it. What are you going to do? So now, if you want to really invest in it, you're going to have to set up infrastructure to do the accounting and the operations of that asset in Brazil. Then you have to find out what's the tax rules of Brazil, what's the regulatory reporting needs of Brazil. Best of luck. You're going to take 6 to 12 months to figure this out. Clearwater, we have clients already doing it. We could switch it on tomorrow. So that is the flexibility and the value, if you will.
You know, for all the companies that sell into the capital markets, they're always an overlooming bear case, or that there's going to be massive consolidation in the industry. I mean, it's all been happening for the last 20, 25 years. How do you interact with that, whether it's emerging markets or even established market like the US and the UK? Consolidation is going to happen. But how do you protect your, you know, revenue base and your, the flow of sales that you get from them?
Yeah, so we love it. We love consolidation for exactly the same reason, Anurag. So you're sitting here and you buy a company out in Japan or buy a company in Hong Kong. Do you understand the risk? Do you understand the regulatory reporting needs? Do you understand what their asset valuation is? Is it done correctly, wrongly, rightly? And you want to see that. You don't want to be waiting, Anurag, as a chief investment officer of a company which you just acquired and have data. Now, tomorrow morning, if you were with Clearwater, Anurag, you would have every day at 9 o'clock in the morning, you would have a comprehensive view, including all of those companies you just bought.
So just from a similar vein, when you look at the entire revenue growth rate for you right now, how do you break it down into, you know, what portion of that comes from acquiring new customers? The second driver could be upselling into the new customer base. And the third one could be pricing. If I look at consensus right now for you guys, it's, you know, somewhere around, I think, 18% or so for next year. How should I think about it? Or let's not even think about next year. Let's talk about the last year when you grew sales about 21%. How should I think of the breakdown of that 21% between some of these elements?
Yeah, so, you know, as you know, we have grown pretty steadily. And so this is really nice over the last 5 years. It's almost all organic. And so we have this really nice growth rate. And the way to think about it, the simplest way to think about maybe Anurag, is that NRR tends to be this 107, 108%, right? So that is current clients, a little bit of churn. Churn is typically 2%, like we discussed. 100 goes down to 98. You know, price gets us 2.5%, 3%, something in that region, right? And so that, and then you have some upsell, and that gets us to this 107, 108 in that region, right? And the rest of the growth is new logos. So a lot of new logos, sort of on a continuous basis, we would So that is the strength. I think it's a lot of clients moving from their legacy solutions to our solution is the secret of the growth here.
Now, I think it's so cleanly put, honestly. I don't hear a lot of CEOs put it so succinctly. Now, let's talk about your journey to the public cloud. Can you tell us a little bit about that, where you are, and what's next in that journey?
Yeah, so just to give you a sense, and you obviously understand tech well. So we began working in earnest, I think, in the back half of 22, right? And literally completed the whole program in Q4 of last year. So literally 15, 16, 18 months in that time frame, we were able to complete the entire movement to AWS. Now, we completed this in Q4, but I did want to say to you that, look, it was a serious amount of time, investment, and effort. This was not for the faint-hearted. At one point, I think half the R&D team was working on the cloud migration. And so the question was, why? Why were we doing this? Why were we spending that much energy, right, on this? And I'll give you three or four reasons. One is, we were becoming global real quick. And then having customers sitting in Hong Kong, hitting up on systems here in the US. Same thing with Europe. Europe was expanding really quickly. And therefore, not being on the public cloud was going to become an increasingly bigger problem for us. So that was point number one. Point number two was, we set up a big center out in Edinburgh and also in India. For them to be hitting our systems out in the US, again, for a global workforce, it just doesn't work, right, if we don't have a public cloud. The third thing, and the most important one was, it does improve scalability dramatically. So if you think about our business, Anurag, all the data comes in after market close, and big pressure at that time for the systems and the platform. And then after 9 o'clock, the reports are sort of out there, then it sort of falls off to nothing. So you do have a staggered view of what you need in terms of capacity. And when you want it, you want the peak capacity. And so scalability massively different on the public cloud, as you know. And then, you could say the last reason was, just undifferentiated heavy lifting goes away. Obviously, when you go to the public cloud, you can do undifferentiated heavy lifting goes down dramatically. One other point I wanted to make, I think I was talking to a client and they said, okay, when am I going to get upgraded to that new version? I'm like, that's the beauty of a single instance multi-tenant. You already are. Everybody already is on this new system. So look, I think we are proud because we did it in time, and we grew EBITDA. So it's not like we went and said, oh, guess what? We're going to invest a bunch of money and I'm going to take profits and cash flow down. We continue to make the investment and grow the bottom line.
I mean, the case you make is pretty easy to understand, because when you have peak time after market close and you're not going to use capacity after that. So did you decide to build your own capacity? Did you decide to go with a hyperscaler? How did you go about that choice?
Yeah, so we used to buy the servers, right? We would buy for peak capacity, which would sit idle for most of the time, right? And that was just the business model of what we had grown up with. But I do think also it's our clients, Anurag. I think the clients were a little bit worried about being on the public cloud. And over the last 4 or 5 years, that's gone away completely, right? So that helped us. So once you get to AWS, of course, you can spin up and you can spin down as you sort of need it. And we know exactly what our load is likely to be. And so we are, for us, it's a bit of a game changer in how we, how consistently we can deliver.
No, fair point. It wouldn't be right if I don't talk about Gen AI. That's the core topic for everybody. So tell us a little bit about how you are approaching the subject and what's your personal opinion on how the market shapes up with everything Gen AI.
I think of it as, I'm old enough to remember people said, oh, internet is not going to impact me. It's just going to impact books and maybe travel. And then I'm also old enough to remember people said, oh, offshore is not for me. It's not my drill. I don't need it. The point is, I think Gen AI is going to change everything on rug. I'm one of those who sort of, we believe it. We did invest a lot of money in it starting last year. And so I can just point to something. So let's talk about Gen AI depends a lot on the data you have, right? And the benefit of a Clearwater is all of our clients are on the cloud, single instance, multi-tenant, which means all the clients have in a single database all of this happens across the same database. So our ability to push the GenAI models on that is exceedingly high. So our efficiency changes very meaningfully. If you are a new person who joined us tomorrow, Anurag, the GenAI platform would actually give you solutions to what the customer is asking. So you get a customer saying, why is my amortization so much? And the GenAI would be able to spin back at 10 years of what we have answered to that kind of question and come up with a solution for you. So again, still human in the loop, but you'll be so much more efficient. And the way we proved that was last year, revenue grew, as you know, 21%. The number of people we added in operations, zero. Customer satisfaction went up, employee satisfaction went up, and GenAI was fully impactful. So I feel it makes us massively more efficient by two things. One, it helps deflection. So lots of times customers don't even ask us the question because they have a GenAI button on the platform they have on the portal, and they ask a question and they will be satisfied with the answer. They don't even ask us the question. So the deflection rates have gone up. And the second one is our ability to resolve, or the speed of resolution, improve very meaningfully. And that's why we could sort of grow without adding headcount. So that's a real practical thing about GenAI. I think that continues to grow, though. I think we continue to become higher deflection, higher ability to resolve faster. So that is one train of GenAI. The other one is growth, right? So can I, as a client, can I provide you with more insights into your portfolio, which can help you make better decisions? I think I can. The final one is all this manual work which you do, I can track it, and can I create assistants which can do that for you? So I feel like there's a lot of things you can do with GenAI to increase growth, right? And as from a Clearwater perspective, very much all in. We've got results. It's not even investment anymore. I call it really an investment, but we're getting a return which is so high that it really is a way to improve efficiency across the company.
That's a fair point. But, you know, the question sometimes from a lot of people is, well, how are you going to monetize it? Are you going to price your software, up north and spread it across the entire suite? Or are you going to come up with a plus plan? You know, what is your viewpoint? Because, you know, in the software space, we are seeing all sorts of different models that people are putting to monetize GenAI.
Yeah, but remember that because of that story I gave you about becoming much, much more efficient, our gross margin has continued to march up very meaningfully, Anurag, right? So right away, if you can improve EBITDA 2% and then 3% or whatever that number is, that is one way to think about just which you already delivered. So this is not about tomorrow. It's what we have already shown if we look at the quarterly numbers over the last three quarters. That's one. Yeah, I do expect that when we provide insights to clients, we would charge them a certain amount of money for it. And why would you not pay? So let's say we could do your compliance reporting much better. Yeah, you probably have five people doing your compliance work for you. If we could cut it down to two, why would you not pay me? And by the way, my level of efficiency and the accuracy is going to be much better and ever improving because I'm learning from each one of these mistakes or adjustments. So I feel like clients are going to be very happy to pay for it, except you have to have a proper value proposition. You can't just get paid for, I'm doing GenAI for you. Nobody really cares, right? But if you have insights which they can monetize, if you can make them more efficient, they will. So I do feel you've got to think about clients. So the way we are doing that is we go to clients with the ideas and we look for client design partners and say, would you pay X for it? And design it jointly with you. And so most of our ideas are not grown in-house. We come up with these ideas, we go to clients, and if none of the clients agree to be a design partner, that's a message in itself, right, Anurag? You sort of, why is no one signing on? And if they're not willing to pay anything for it, they probably don't see the value of it. So we use that as a bit of a test. But, you know, if you ask me today that, is it on the revenue side, is it already a big growth number? No, it's not. On the efficiency side, is it already having real impact on financial? Yes, it is. So I think there's a little bit of a lag in the growth because it takes a little bit longer to take it out to the clients.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, gross margin improvement is good, NPS improvement is good, so there is some tangible benefit. So I you know, this is like sometimes a normal phase of software development. You don't need to have, you know, a higher SKU to really get the benefits of it. Are there any sectors that you currently think are underpenetrated and you really need to push forward and you know, expand in that area? Or geography for that matter?
Yeah, I think that, you know, our basic approach right now is that if we go into a market, we win 80% of the time. Why not do more of it? So what does that really mean? So one is, should we do much more of North American insurance? So we have continued to add, you know, horsepower in terms of GTM. The second one is Europe. I mean, don't forget, a lot of our clients obviously have assets in Europe, have assets in Asia. So we already have built all of that. So a lot of the growth we expect to come out of Europe, I think it is just going to be growing faster. We set up Asia, expect that to grow faster. Right. So I feel there's a geographic element to it. Industry wise, I feel like staying with insurance and asset managers and corporates and other asset owners sort of is a lot. We win already 80% of the time. Finally, I do think we are spending a lot of money on alternative assets and how to get more insight into them. Right. So think about private equity, for example. You've invested in 200 private equity partnerships. Okay, how do we get you insight into that in a timely way and manage that whole process? So those are the areas where we think we can grow, get some higher growth, if you will, and kind of sustain this rate. But we're not looking to try and grow much faster. We think this is a good growth rate, and we can continue to grow at this for a period of time.
No, no, I'll take 18-20% anytime, so there's nothing wrong about that. Perhaps this has been a good discussion. Let me ask you my last question for the day. You know, when you look at all the technology innovations that you're working on, the platform, especially as it relates to AI, you know, what can we expect over the next 12 to 24 months, perhaps the next time we talk?
Yeah, look, I think that the company's brand is still limited. And we expect to continue to win larger and larger clients around the world. And I think that our standing in the community would continue to change. One last thing which I would point out is, when you think about how to amortize a certain asset class you have on a rug, where do you go right now? You know, you go to EY or you go to somebody like that and sort of try and figure out. We will be able to tell you. We will be able to tell you on a rug that out of the 500 clients in insurance, 382 do this, 200 do this. We will be able to become the keepers of best practice in our industry numerically. We will be able to say what your peers are doing. Finally, and which might be the most exciting one over time, maybe 3 to 5 years, is what are your peers returning? What yield are they generating? And I will be able to help you improve it because all of it is in one database.
No, excellent, Sandeep. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you for taking the time, and we'll look forward to having you again.